A lot of people think that the state of Michigan might be moving in the direction, ever so slowly, but towards the direction of neighboring Wisconsin. That is to say, it's an industrial state that had previously been dominated by Democrats moving towards the Republican column. A lot of people were hoping that Mike Rogers, very prominent, respected defense authority and foreign policy specialist in the House of Representatives, would be running for the U.S. Senate. But he declines to run for the U.S. Senate to replace the retiring Carl Levin, a Democrat who's quitting. And he decides not to even run for re-election. Instead, he's going to be a radio talk show host. John Fund from National Review to tell us more. Hey, John Fund, good morning. How are you?
Pleasure. Good to hear from you.
Were you surprised to hear this news about Mike Rogers?
Mildly. It's not common for someone to make a career shift this dramatic. On the other hand, as I say in my column at nationalreview.com, it seems that politics and media are blurring together in ways that we've never seen before.
Okay, John, we just missed everything you said. Your phone went underwater there for about 12 seconds.
Well, as I said, I was mildly surprised that Mike Rogers did that, and I frankly didn't expect it. But the blurring the lines between media and politics is increasingly what's happening in American politics.
Yes, I've noticed that trend myself. But here's what surprised me. He had a pretty good shot. This is, you know, a relatively young. He's 50 years old. He's had a stellar career. He's highly regarded, highly respected. He could raise the money. He would have been a real contender for U.S. Senate. And he decides not to make that run and not to even stay where he is. But he said he's going to do a nationally syndicated radio show.
Well, a lot of people in media say they'd never run for office because why would they give up all the power they have? And let's be honest, the United States Senate is no longer fun. Certainly under Harry Reid, it's become a bitter, nasty, brutish place where it's not really collegial and it's certainly not deliberative.
Yeah, but again, I'm hoping that there's a new majority leader in town. You know,
that doesn't change everything overnight. It's still extremely difficult to get things done in the Senate, and the partisan divide, the bitterness, the anger would remain because the Senate is likely to be locked in a relatively close, you know,
yeah,
balance for the next few years.
Yes, no, that is true. That is true. But I'm looking forward to hearing Mike's show. He's syndicated by a company that handles a couple of our hosts here on KVI. But I was just mildly surprised that someone who was chairing a pretty powerful committee, House Intelligence, was stepping down for that reason. While I have you, John, wanted to get your take on the new Washington Post ABC News poll that supposedly shows a swing in sentiment about the Affordable Care Act, i.e. Obamacare.
Well, as I've said many times on your show, John, any one poll should be discounted unless you see it ratified in other polls. And the most consistent polling in this has been from the Gallup poll and the Pew Research Organization, mm-hmm, and the Kaiser Foundation. And they consistently show support for Obamacare being dramatically lower. I think we need to average the polls together. That's the best way to get a real snapshot and even out the anomalies. So it's interesting the Washington Post found that. I really would like to see how they asked the questions and exactly what sample they had. Was it a sample of all voters? Was it a sample of registered voters? Was it a sample of likely voters? Because you can have Obamacare slightly more popular among all Americans, but that doesn't help the Democrats if the likely voters who show up in November are really agitated about this. And I'll tell you what the NBC Wall Street Journal poll found. In intensity, they found only 12% of people were very favorable towards Obamacare, while 43% were very negative.
Yeah.
That kind of intensity means the first group doesn't turn out to the polls and the second group will.
Well, I tell you what, my favorite website, one of my favorite websites, Real Clear Politics, did a summation of poll averages, and they find that you got it right. The support for the Affordable Care Act very much lags opposition to it. And when you get into the intensity issue, it's not even a close call. And it's not only that on the Affordable Care Act, it's also that about the president himself. For instance, the Rasmussen poll shows that while America is divided almost evenly on whether the president is doing a good job or a bad job, only 25% strongly approve of his performance, 38% strongly disapprove.
That kind of upside-down number is exactly the kind of number George W. Bush had in 2006, and that's when Democrats took control of both the House and the Senate,
right,
and it was a wipeout. It was a wave election.
What is your take on the White House spin regarding the purported 7 million people signing up for the Affordable Care Act, John?
Well, they got their target however they wish to define it, and they changed the target often enough they were guaranteed to reach their target. I'll just leave you with one number that the RAND Corporation just came out, and this ratifies a previous McKinsey & Company management survey. They say one-third of the people who have signed up on the exchange previously lacked insurance. In other words, we have overturned and upset the entire American healthcare system, affecting all 320 million Americans, in order to basically, so far, get about 2 million people covered who were not previously insured through the exchanges.
That's 2 million of the 30 million uninsured Americans.
And even the Obamacare administration's own estimate is, by 2022, we're still going to have 20 million Americans lacking health insurance. And many of those who are going to get coverage are going to be dumped into Medicaid, which, John, you know, 60% of doctors won't take new Medicaid patients. Medicaid is substandard medicine, as the Oregon survey of 40,000 patients just found. And frankly, it's medicine I wouldn't take my dog to.
And the other part of that is the purported reason why medical, why hospitals should support Medicaid expansion is it would supposedly deter people from using the emergency room for routine medical maladies. And that same Oregon study pointed out that it actually made it worse. That it increased ER use 40%.
Let's just say the Obama administration apparently is not really interested in better health care as much as it is interested in more dependency on the state, which for their own political reasons they feel advantages them. It's about as cynical a move as you can ever possibly make, because you're dealing with people's lives, their security, and their sense of well-being.
All right. John Fund, always great hearing you and having you here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Check out John's great columns, National Review, particularly his latest on Mike Rogers, a rising star in Congress who's leaving to become a radio talk show host. I can tell him the water's warm here, John. It's a great place to be now.
I'll be coming out in June to take a look at it. Thanks.
I'm looking forward to it. That's John Fund from National Review joining us here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 17 minutes before 9 o'clock. And I wanted to quickly address an issue that a lot of people are talking about, and it's beginning to creep its way into the news media coverage, and that is the rising price of gasoline. Late last week, I had to fill up, and I filled up at a Chevron station on Bellevue Way, $3.99 a gallon for regular. Over the weekend, so I didn't fill all the way up, and what do you know? I needed gas again when I was in Seattle. I pulled up to a station not far here from Fisher Plaza, $4.06 a gallon. So with gasoline topping nearly $4 a gallon, is there anything you can do to cut your gasoline bill? The answer is yes. Yes, there is. If you go to a website, it almost guarantees you will shave money off your gasoline bill. That is WashingtonGasPrices.com. WashingtonGasPrices.com. You go to that website, Again, WashingtonGasPrices.com. And underneath the banner, search gas prices, you just put in your city and hit search. And instantly, all the places in your community selling gas, starting with the lowest price, instantly appear. For instance, I paid $3.99 for gasoline in Bellevue. I could have spent $3.59 a gallon in Bellevue. I could have saved 40 cents a gallon by buying gasoline 3.5 miles away. And it tells me where. And it, coincidentally, it's where I usually buy gasoline. And there's about a dozen other places I could have got it for less money. So if you go to WashingtonGasPrices.com, you click in your community, regardless of where you live, north, south, east, west, and you hit search, they will tell you where the cheapest gasoline is in your community. So take advantage of that. And like I said, in Bellevue, Washington, where I live, there's a 40-cent range in price between the Safeway on Bell Red and 140th and the Chevron on the 2600 block of Bellevue Way, Northeast 26th and Bellevue Way. 40 cents a gallon. That kind of differential is in a lot of communities, maybe including yours. And even if it's just 20 cents a gallon, that's still real money. So check it out, WashingtonGasPrices.com. Put in your community and hit search, and that's your consumer tip of the day. Courtesy of the John Carlson Show here, Talk Radio 570 KVI.